Okay, so we just began last week the kashrus aspect of Hilchos Challah. So we're really coming off the heels of Hilchos Trumos because there are so many similarities between the two. In fact, on the Araisidika level, they're almost identical in the sense of that in our Torah you cannot eat produce that grew in Eretz Yisrael before separating the proper Trumos and Raisers. So too, you cannot eat a dough that was made out of produce that grew in Eretz Yisrael before separating Challah. Just as when it comes to Truma, so the Truma that's separated has to go to the Kohen, so too the Challah has to go to the Kohen. Just as a Yisrael is not permitted, a Zar is not permitted to eat Truma on the punishment of Misa B'deshimayim, the same is true when it comes to Challah. If a Yisrael or a non-Kohen would eat Challah and Challah on the level of their Isa, would be the Mamash, the Halakha equivalent of eating Truma. So, just as again, to continue the similarities, that just as the Halachas of Truma V'Tahara govern the eating of Truma, if either of the Truma is Tameya or if the Kohen is Tameya, either one of them is problematic. The degree of Isra is not quite the same. It's much more of a problem for the Kohen to eat it, Betuma, than to eat the Truma, if it's just the Truma itself is Tameya. But the Maisa, they're both awesome in HaTorah. So the exact same thing is true for Challah. So pretty much everything carries over from Truma to Challah. If we would be dealing with Challah and love of Deraisa, which we are generally speaking not, especially in Chutz Loretz, for sure not, we are dealing with an Issa Derabbanan, a Mitzvah Derabbanan of Challah's Chutz Loretz. We mentioned last week the reason why Chazal even instituted this Mitzvah is because Challah doesn't appear to people to be so agricultural. Most people think of Challah in terms of bakeries and kitchens, so therefore Chazal were concerned that it doesn't give off the appearance of a Mitzvah Kli Baretz, and therefore they wanted to make sure that it's done even in Chutz Loretz. So we are bound by the Dinim of Challah Midrabbanan, but since the whole Challah's Chutz Loretz is such a low-level mitzvah derabbanan, many, many of the things I just mentioned do not actually apply. Many of the carry-offs, many of the spillovers do not apply. So some of this becomes very, very important for us just in terms of the intricacies of halacha. Before we even get to what kinds of doughs is obligated in Challah, just to get a little bit of a background as to what Challah really does mean for us, lamaisa, in terms of the Yisurim to Yisrael, to Kohen, to Tamei, etc. The Gemara tells us in the Maseches Bechoros that because Challah's Chutz Loretz is with the Rabbanan, it's a very low level of the Rabbanan, Chazal built certain coolers into it. And therefore, for the most part, or for a significant part, the dinim of Tumah don't really apply. Namely, even if the Challah is Tameah, so the Kohen would be permitted to eat it. Even if the Kohen is Tameh, he would be permitted to eat it, provided that it's not a certain type of Tumah. The Gemara differentiates between the Tumah Yetzel and Megufo versus the Tumah Smaga. A person can become Tameh either because there's something wrong with their body, means they're a Zav, they're a Mitzvah, or something like that, or they can become Tameh because they touched the dead body, they touched the dead mass, etc. So there's a slight nuance in other areas of Hilchos Tumah between these kinds of tumors, and therefore Chazal patterned this, and when they instituted that Challah's Chutz Loretz is treated to a certain degree with Kedusha, it's only Asumah to Misha Tumah Yesel HaMegufo. If the Kohen just happens to have some other tumors on him, so that wouldn't really be the end of the world. So practically speaking, it could be conceivable that a Kohen would be permitted under certain limited circumstances to eat Challah's Chutz Loretz. If the Kohen went to the mikvah, so he removed any potential problems of Tumah Yesel HaMegufo, if he's concerned that he's a Zav, he may want to go to a Mayon, to a spring, but that's a whole other story, not for now. So in theory, it would be possible, even though we're all talking to Mizmeis, for a Kohen to eat Challah's Chutz Loretz. The general practice is that we do not do this. Although even as late as the days of the Magen Avraham, there were places that once a year they would have a custom that the Kohanim would partake of Challah's Chutz Loretz just to show that they were Kohanim. It was a lahachzik b'kuna ceremony. But again, past the 1500s of Poland, I do not know when exactly that practice ended. The Magen Avraham still makes reference to it. Lamais, I don't. Any Kohanim here? You guys ever eat Challah's Chutz Loretz? Okay, good. Okay, so I don't think it made it over. One of these got lost in between Poland and Bruggenfield. So Lamai, so we just follow the practice. Kohanim, generally speaking, do not eat Challah's Chutz Loretz. However, there is a one particular kula that the Gemara does give about Challah's Chutz Loretz that may actually be relevant, and we actually had to put this into practice in Lamai a couple of years ago. The Gemara says, what would it then be of Challah's Chutz Loretz? You already separated the Challah, and then the Challah gets mixed up. It's mixed in with the rest of the dough. How did this happen? This has happened at least three times to me, not in Russia. hopefully I know not in my kitchen, but I've already received the shout, I think three times already, about people who separate challah, they put it down, and they walk out of the room for a minute, and the kid starts playing with it and tosses it right back into the bowl. You would think this would never happen, but I can tell you that it happened already, documented in my lifetime already three times. I've gotten the shiloh. So now what do you do? Now you have this whole mixture, whole tarnovis of there's a little bit of challah schutzlots in there. So gevalt, what do you do? So the Gemara is a special cool. The Gemara says that challah schutzlots is betel barov. That since it's such a low level dinder rabbanon, it's both the barov. As long as you have a majority of non challah, then it's going to be okay. But there's a big machlokes we show them what that means. So we paskin in halacha, what that means is as follows. That means that vis-a-vis the issue of a czar eating it, that we're not going to be mekel. That isra is still more chomer, and therefore Chazal did not lift that isra just because it's both the barov. Bittul barov doesn't help. Same way bittul barov doesn't help for other isurim halacha. But vis-a-vis any tumah issues, even if it's a tumah yetzel megufo that would otherwise be a problem, so bittul barov, we can look the other way. So what does that mean practically? So now I have this big mess here, I got this big batch of dough, which has some little small amount of challah, the chutzlort snuck in there, together with a tremendous amount of yeast of dough that's perfectly permissible. So now, what do you do at that point? So if you want kohanim to eat it, that would be chora be hetogomer. That vis-a-vis a kohen eating it, the kohen wouldn't even have to run to the mikvah. Legabe, the iser of tumor, whatever low-level iser of tumor exists, so a kohen would be permitted to actually eat that dough. So one time when it happened, if I'm not mistaken, I think one of the cases was that the family were kohanim. So I told them they could eat it. They could mamish eat the... strange, they could eat that. They can't have any guests for Shabbos, though. So they have to make sure nobody else eats it, because that's mamish gemar. It's mamish farish din shechon aruch. That if it's batel barov vis-a-vis any concerns of kohanim, of tumah, etc., that would be mutter. However, to invite a czar to have it would be problematic. So the other times that it was relevant for Yisraelim, so then we have mamash in a pickle. So what do you do? So there's an eitzah that the place can give. What you do is that you mevatel the hafrashas challah. It means you retroactively undo the hafrashas challah and start all over again. How do you do that? So the answer is that good old friend for the taras the darim. So that's the Gemara Maseches the darim that says you can actually do a taras the darim and a hafrashas truma. Even on level of their eyes, it's a person separated truma, and then they realize they didn't want to do it this way, they want to do something else. They tell a whole story, they come to the Beis Din, and they explain, mischart, and imekara, tesam, chavrad, whatever the standards of a taras the darim are. And hocus pocus, the basic can declare that the hafrashas challah was betela. Why is that? Because hafrashas are like in yonim of haflah, the things that are created by a person's mouth, a person's dibur, mashak, whatever you need to create hafrashas, and therefore the subject to this special halacha moshe b'taras tadarim. So that's an explicit gemara. As long as it hasn't yet been bali at kohen. Once it arrives in the kohen's hands, that's a whole different story. But kozman hasn't yet been given to the kohen, so technically you could do hataras tadarim. The Paiskim write in a Chaschala that you can do a Taras Tadam and a Fresh Chaschala as well. The only thing is, once you do that Taras Tadam, then you have to start all over again. Then it's Tevel, but that's okay. It's fine. So that's basically what we did. So two other times what we did is that we had the person come and do an official Hataras Nadarim. They said that if I would have known that this would happen, and the Mischaret, Meikarev, the whole Nusach, whatever it is, and then Mutalach, and the Chala becomes no longer Chala, and then the whole mixture goes back to being tevel. As it goes back to being tevel, good. So we deal with the tevel, get the other tevel, and you mafra shigam the bracha. And the post gave a shayla, what right do you have to do this? It turns out your first bracha was a bracha batala. Okay. So when you made the bracha, you didn't make a batala. That's a shayla, it was brachas. If a person makes a bracha thinking that he's doing a bracha properly, and then something else occurs later that invalidates the bracha retroactively, is that a problem? Is that considered to be like I have to do something to prevent that from happening? This, you know, this comes up the most in Til Sudan. Okay, yeah. But Til Sudan, this comes up. The person washes Til Sudan, they sit down, and they say, you know what? The pizza's not so. They take one bite, it's not worth the calories. So is that the mafreya now they have to eat the slice of pizza? Otherwise, it turns out that they had a bracha about tov Til Sudan. If you don't eat a kezayis or beitz or whatever you think now you have to eat for a bracha. So the Poskim quote a ritva that says that when you wash the Tzidayim, you did it al shem mitzvah. So it's not a bracha about tova. It's not yetz of pivot about tova. The fact that something happens 20 minutes later to make a batala, this is nishkul about tova. So the Poskim discussed this by the Fresh Chala story also. So the bottom line is we did that. So it was actually, it was a late Friday afternoon. I remember a woman called me from our shul, all frantic that she had one of my kids threw the go inside, and then she didn't realize it, and then someone got baked up, a whole story. So what do I do? Gebal. So I told the Rav, I said, come with Duat Taras Adar. So they wanted to do Duat Taras Adar right before Shabbos. They wanted to use those rolls for Shabbos. I think they got mixed up in the morning. I forgot to write what the whole story was. So she calls me right late in the afternoon on Friday. Well, what can I do? So I said, no big deal. I said, just come here. So I said, but I need a Beis Din. This was before Beis Din to Zooms were being, before anyone thought of that idea. So this was the old story. So she came. I remember she came. I told her, come Ramesh right before Mincha. I said, we'll have two guys in Shul. One or two guys do come around for Mincha. So I told her, Mamish, come right before Yvonne Shalach, quickly, push down the corner. So they quickly, come to Shul. We'll do a quick Atar Sadar. Anyone remember who was on that Beis Din? I don't remember who the other two, who comes early to Shul. Okay. Whoever comes over to shul was on that Beis Din, and I said we're doing a Taras Adar and a first Chal to Dayan, and I don't know who they were. They thought I was absolutely out of my mind. I said, no, I'm not out of my mind. I'm telling you, this is Zeshtek in the Paskim in the first Chal. This is what you're supposed to do. Okay, anyway, stranger stories. Yeah.
So it doesn't make a difference whether it's baked already or not?
No, it was baked already. Yeah. So again, we mentioned that the original model of Hafreshes Challah should have been equivalent to Hilchos Truma, and a level of Deraisa would be equivalent, but Chazal were very, very lenient. This whole Hafreshes Challah is such a low, low level Derabbanan, and they put a lot of leniencies into it. So one of the very important leniencies that they built into it is what's called, unlike Truma, where it is inconceivable to eat first and worry about the problem later, that's called Misim Deshimayim. When it comes to Chalas Chutzlar, it's the Din is Fakir, that you're actually allowed to eat first, Eichel Echach Mafresh. You can eat first, and then you worry about afrasha. Get around doing afrasha at a later point. We'll talk about it in a moment. That afrasha can take place either from the dough, that's where it should take place, or really afterwards, if you baked it up already, you can still be mafresh then. So the Gemara says in Bukharis, Eich lechach mafresh, you can eat first, and you'll deal with the afrasha chal. Only take care of the afrasha chal at some later point. That is not true in Eretz Yisrael. Even though Chaz Eretz is also Derabbanan, that's a high level of Derabbanan, the special leniency of Eich Lechach Mafresh doesn't apply. There's a lot of lomdus as what that means. Does it mean that Hafreshes Challah is not really Nisa Teva, it's just a Mitzvah Hafresha, or is it a Nisa Teva, but it's a different kind of Nisa Teva, so you can pilk from today to tomorrow, but the mind said the bottom line is the state in Shulchan Aruch, Eich Lechach Mafresh. So this is very important for us for the following, that there is an Issa to be Mafresh, Truma, Sebaisa, and Challah on Shabbos. It's also debates about a Yom Tov, but on Shabbos, for sure, it's also to be mafresh, tumas, and raisers, and challah. The reason for this being is a throwback from the Hilchos Shabbos Shiurim, is because it's mechzeh kimisakin. It looks like you're fixing something. Something was not usable before, and now you're fixing it up. So that gives off the look of being of misakin. And what's so terrible about being misakin? So that smacks a little bit of the malacha of makom patish. Now, this is not makom patish gomor for possible multiple reasons. That first of all, it's not really broken. I have a shtender, so if the leg isn't on properly, so I take a screwdriver, screw it in to fix it. That's called makba patish minatar. Makba patish does not require a hammer. It doesn't even require any tools. Anytime you take something that's broken and you put the final touches on it, that's a malacha d'oraisa. So makba patish minatar probably only applies when there's some kind of a physical tikkun, some degree of a physical change. Something that is just purely spiritual. Halachic in nature is most probably not makba patish. I reserved that comment a little bit, going back to, this was some of the Motzei Shabbos Shiur from last year, but when we finished up Hilchos Shabbos, there's a little bit of a question in Rishonim about that, but at least in these cases, most probably, there's not going to be Makom Patish Min HaTorah. It's quite possible there's no Makom Patish Min HaTorah on Hafrashas for another reason, because it's food. It's not Kalim. That's a big, big question. Mr. Gura quotes a big machlokes that he had with other Acharonim about, is there Makom Patish on food? So there's a prima godim that suggests that maybe there would be, if you really fix a broken food on Shabbos, that could potentially be a malacha machma patish. If you take something that's totally, completely inedible and you make it edible, not through cooking with bishul, but if you figure out some other way to take a food that's totally inedible and make it edible without heat, so some achronim hold that's a malacha deraisa machma patish. And Mishnah Berurah says, lohayot rabbi yadam, there's no such malacha deraisa. So even though there's no malacha deraisa makom patish, there is some kind of a misach in kli here. There is some kind of a problem here that midirabbanan, Chazal said, you're not allowed to be mafresh things as a gezeira, that's nira, whatever it is, like a makom patish. Even though there's no, there may not be makom patish on food, one malacha that is on food is bonim, that's from the Farshi Gemara. Gemara says, if you make cheese on Shabbos, makabin is chaymish u'bonim, because you take little pieces and you stick them together to be a big, big unit, So one unit together, so that's considered to be a malacha bona derezza. This is still the ongoing saga. We reached crisis mode about a week ago. I got another crisis call about the sushi making on Shabbos. So we still have not come to an absolute conclusion about whether making sushi on Shabbos is a malacha derezza or not. So the caterers are still fighting about it. So we're still trying to figure out what the policy is. So we'll keep you posted in case you, if you find yourself at an event making sushi, don't screw with me. But we're trying to get that stopped. Yeah.
Would horror be an issue?
What?
Horror. Because you're doing that properly, you can't eat it.
You're doing bora? No, I don't think that's really bora. It's really menecha. It's mamash the same. You have a dough, and you're taking something out of the dough. So I'm not sure that would be really bora. It's mamash. No, but it's all the same. But I take it out, so when I'm taking it out, it's not really challah yet. So it's mamash menecha. Now when it's in my hand, I declare it's a challah, and then I put it aside. I'm not sure it would be bora. Anyway, the bottom line is you can't do it. But whatever the reason is, you can't do it. So now you're in a little bit of a challenging situation because you forgot to be mafish challah. So here your wife baked these beautiful rolls up, beautiful challah loaves for Shabbos, and you forgot to be mafish challah. So what do you do? So if you're in chutz laretz, you have a very, very simple eitzah. Enjoy, make a mitzvah, enjoy, eat the suda and everything. Just leave a little bit aside at the end that after Shabbos is over, you'll be able to be mafresh because you have to be oichel v'achakach mafresh. So that's perfectly okay. It's mutlach atchil. You can eat the whole challah, you can roll the roll, roll the bread, everything, enjoy everything. But just at the very, very end, leave a little piece, put it in a little baggie and put it aside. Don't say, here is a challah. You're not allowed to be mafresh challah on Shabbos. Just put it aside. As soon as Havdalah is over, then you just say, here is a challah. There is a shadow in the poskim whether you could say, here is a challah, that little piece, and then discard that little piece, or whether you have to break that little piece, so to speak, and then be mafresh a little bit and leave a little bit of that little piece over. Why is that? Because it's a din when you're mafresh chuba and challah, you have to have shiraya, you have to have leftovers. Let's say a guy wants to be very generous. He's got 100 apples. Now, today's, I like the figures to try to give him 100 apples. So I'm going to be mafresh all 100 as chuba, so that's no good. Because the Torah says, racious the gunfa, racious the chaltika shiraya. There has to be something that's left over. So you have to have a leftover from challah as well. So the shah of the poskim, can the leftovers be all the food that I ate already? So I ate 6 rolls already, and now we mafresh the little crumbs at the end. So that'll be the shirayim is what I ate. Or no, maybe you need shirayim, mikan lahaba. So if you want to be mafresh with that shayla, so you take the little piece that you put aside in a little baggie, and you take a little piece off of that, and let's say Shabbos, and say that it's challah, and then the rest you can eat it throughout, whatever you want with it. Anyway, so the bottom line is this din of ochre, her mafresh is very helpful in chutz laretz. In Eretz Yisrael, it's not going to work, but in chutz laretz, it will work.
Change
of
bracha at all?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we're not sure you're supposed to say those words Menisa in the first place, but it's not Menisa, it's still a little bit of Menisa. Menisa, that's in my belly. There's a machlekes, what the Nisa, three different Niskas, but what the Niska bracha is for Mas'al, Ila Hafish Chala, La Hafish Chuma, La Hafish Chala Menisa. So the one that's the most popular is the one that doesn't appear in Shulchan Aruch. Hafish Chala Menisa is the one that doesn't appear anywhere. And that became somehow the famous many, many people have. So now that we have a little bit of an understanding as to the relationship and some of the differences, similarities and differences between Truma and Chala, between Chala's Chutzlars, let's see if we can familiarize ourselves just with when there's the Mitzvah Chala. What exactly you have to do in order to be obligated in the Mitzvah Chala. So Chala is a little bit tricky because the Torah throws around two different terms that are not necessarily always go hand in hand. One is the term lechem, b'chochem and lechem aretz, and the other is reishis arisaseichem. It speaks about a dough. So there is a big machlekes in the Rishonim at the following shaila. Let's say I have something that was baked. So baking is usually synonymous with lechem. So usually baking in ovens and lechem, those terms usually go hand in hand. So I have an item, I have a food that was baked in an oven, but it is very, very different than bread. It is so different than bread because bread is a blila ovah, it's a thick dough. Bread and matzahs are made out of thick doughs, whereas the food that I have in front of me is more of a battery kind of a food. It's very, very soft kind of a mixture. So what's called an halacha, blila racha. Unlike lechem, which is a blila ova, which is a thick dough, this is a blila racha. So a cake, regular cake, sponge cake, marble cake, good old style cake from the 1960s. So I dated myself yesterday. I had to, in the middle of my little bit of complications yesterday morning during drasha time. So I had to have a little chat with the security guard, so I needed his help a little bit. So we were waiting a little bit. I didn't sit with him for a few minutes. So we were just schmoozing a little bit about the good old days. I always try to bring out some of my my baseball knowledge. It makes them feel like, you know, a little bit more regular, not just the holy rabbi, but like a regular guy. So he was very impressed because I had every stats from the 1970s Mets on the top of the tip of my tongue. I was in Amish, he was, he liked it. Okay, anyway, so back to that story. I forgot why I told that story. Well, the marble cake, right, the good old tall marble cake from the 1970s from the Mets, for the Kiddushin when the Mets lost, so the good old marble cake. So the marble cake and the sponge cake, all the soft battery kinds of cakes, so there's a big question in the Rishonim, are those kinds of pastries, are they obligated in challah or not? So most of the Rishonim hold that yes, the Rash, and the Perish Mishnayis, and the challah, the Rosh, and the Chaschala, and Tosfos, and most of the Rishonim go with the Mahalach, that it is a Chayav in Chala, and the Ramban disagrees. There's a Ramban that wrote a Chaschala. The Ramban's Chaschala are printed in the Ramban's Chaschalas, which are printed in the back of the Sefer Bechoros, because the Rif, for some strange reason, we don't have the Rif of Bechoros, whether he didn't write it, or whether he got lost, I'm not sure. But the Rif wrote all the other Sugas and Shas of the Lamaisa, Bechoros is three quarters of Bechoros is Halacha Lamaisa, and the Rif somehow doesn't have it. So the Ramban wrote what's missing in the Rif. Kumi, the Rif did write it, so it got lost in the shuffle over the last 1,000 years. But the Ramban wrote up the Hilchas Bechoros to the Ramban, which became known basically in place of the Rif. And since some of the sugyas of Chala appear in the Sefer Bechoros, so he wrote his Hilchas Chala in the middle of that Sefer. So in the Ramban had an understanding, and the Talmidim, the Rabbeinu David, the Sefer Pesachim, the Talmidim and the Ramban quote this also from the Rebbe, that the Ramban had a different approach to this than other Rishonim, a different way of reading some of the sugyas of Maseches Challah. And the Ramban basically, his opinion is that if the item is not a thick dough, so it's not Chayav Challah. No, it's just a simple batter kind of a cake. It doesn't matter how much it is, it doesn't matter what it is. It's just that's not called Lechem or Kosu B'Torah, and it's not considered Chayav Challah at all, not the B'Torah, the Drabonim zero. That's not called Challah. So how do we pask in Halacha? It's important, right? I mean, this is a pretty serious question for the bakeries. How do we pask in Halacha? So the Shulchan Aruch does not even quote the Ramban. Didn't even make it onto the radar screen. Shulchan Aruch, Mechav, Ramban. Nobody quotes this Ramban. But the later Acharonim write that somehow it's Rem Stavra like this Ramban. The quote from Reb Chaim, the Rav quote from his grandfather Reb Chaim, who thought that the Ikra Din. I can't tell you what they did in Beis Brisk. I don't know, but he thought the Ikra Din was really like this Ramban. And the others who also, other later Acharonim also thought that maybe the Ikra Din should really be like the Ramban. So it's because of this that developed different customs already back in Europe. There were different bakeries in Europe that had different practices about this. And when these bakeries, the bakers came over to America, so they brought the different customs. That's why you had 60, 70 years ago when the kosher bakeries were starting up in America, so you had different practices about this. And there were some, some of the Hasidic bakeries were actually making on the Shaila, and some of the other bakeries were Momacher on the Shaila. So there are different opinions, there are different opinions. I think Aliyah Mezet. I cannot tell you any given hashkocha what they do. Like some of the Hamish bakers, I don't know honestly what some of them do in terms of the shalom, whether they actually are mafresh challah, they follow what they did back in Europe. I know that the RCBC bakeries are supposed to be following the other opinion that appears in the Shulchan Aruch, that says that challah is supposed to be taken off from everything, even from the batters. I think I don't want to speak for other shkachs. I think that's the standard OU Chavkei policy. I think that's the standard policy in most of the shkachs that we use. But again, there are definitely bakeries that until recently, and could be even on Amazon, that are not being mafish challah from the soft cakes. And they're following that approach that, like Reb Chaim, like others who held that was the Ikra Din. Again, it's household source. It's very, very lenient. So not the end of the world. We had an interesting question about this back in Moresh HaKolel days. That there was a machlokes between main campus and the kollel about mafreshes challah on these kinds of doughs, and these kinds of cakes. So those who remember, who was an old Marsha people, that was Moshe Baker. Is he still around, Moshe Baker? Is he still there? No, he's not there anymore. Moshe Baker man. Anyway, Moshe Baker was him and Sadia the cook. Moshe Baker, they were around from the days of the Ramban. I mean, they were definitely for a long, long time. So they used to bake, used to do a lot of baking. All the cakes were basically baked on campus, and then they were sent down to Kollel together. All the other food was sent down. So the psach that had originally been given in Morasham many, many years before had been that there's no need to be mafresh challah on the batter cakes, which was the common practice in a lot of the Hamish bakeries in our area for many, many years. So that was upset. So apparently some of the people in the coal side got a little nervous about that. So when the cakes used to come from main campus down to the coal house, and there was one fellow who was in charge of being mafish challah and all the cakes that would make their way down. So without a bracha, it was separate a little piece of challah. I remember before Shabbos, he would run into the back of the kitchen. He would chop away a little piece of the cakes to fulfill that shita of the Shulchan Aruch, to fulfill the view of the Rash and the Rush and Rav Rishon probably, who else it would be chayev. I remember years ago when I first heard Rabbi Willick speak about this. So he said that he said what he does when everybody buys cake, has a piece of cake or something from one of these bakeries. So after he finishes eating, so he looks at the crumbs that are left. And there is a challah. You can ochav achakach mafresh, and you don't even have to be mafresh again. You can mafresh from machshav, but nechshav come to maschav. So he says before he puts his plate into the garbage, okay, as in one, and the crumb should be the challah, just in case no one was mafresh challah. So again, I'm not saying you mechut do that. Remember that he told me this maybe over 30 years ago. Okay, anyway, back to that story. Yeah.
I know when it comes to
so the truth is that in our own homes, it's usually, we're not making such big cakes. I mean, our cakes are not so big, unless you're making a lot, you know, big simcha or something. So you just bake up one or two cakes or something, it's not going to be anywhere near the shia. The shia is going to happen much more in an industrial and on bakery kinds of setups. I remember when, right after we got married, so I noticed my wife was making brownies. So I got a little excited. I don't know, brownies, blue lava even. I think blue lava, are they thicker, brownies? I don't know. Are they thick? Brownies are soft or? What?
Men's.
So I remember I got a little excited. I said, wow. I said, okay, well, we have to get ready to make a challah without bracha. So she looked at me like I was crazy. She said, how much did I bake enough? So I said, well, you know, the shear is 43, you know, fifth eggs worth, you know, it's the shiloh, 20th pounds, 3 pounds, 11 cups, 4 or 5 pounds, we'll talk a little bit more about this later on. I said, are you at least 3 pounds of flour? I said, they're like 3 cups of flour, this whole thing. I said, we're only 2 of us, we're not having any, you know, she's ready to wash it over, and I don't have too many brownies. So that was it, that was the first and last time that I can't say the first and last time I stuck my nose in the kitchen. So that was the first time I got yelled at for sticking my. That was definitely not the last time for her. Okay, anyway, so that's in terms of one side of the equation in terms of cakes. But now you have almost the flip side shayla. I say almost, not exactly, almost the flip side shayla. So the cakes, the batter cakes, are soft batters of blila rakba shenefa. What if you have the other way around? What if you have a blila ova? Shen is bashla. So we just spoke about this a couple of weeks ago in one of the brachas. What if you have a thick dough that's never baked? So it's the 180 degree difference from the other shayla. So you have a thick, doughy kind of food that's not baked. It's just cooked or it's deep fried or something, like a donut, for example. So what to do? You have to be mafish challah on those kinds of foods. So here, there's a further machlekes in Mishanim in the other direction. Here, a man of Tam had an understanding that tzchayv and challah. Tam's biggest machlekes in the shayla is the other tzchayv and challah. And here the Rash and the Rush, the other Mishnah disagreed with Rebbeinu Tam. So here the Shulchan Aruch is Takamekim. Here the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that if it never made it inside an oven, it was just inside a pot of water, inside a pot of oil or something, it never made it into an oven, even though it was made as a thick dough, it would not be obligated in Fresh Hashalah. Even though the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that way the Shach writes, the Chidish be Mavish without a bracha, and I don't know how much people are Mavish this Mavish, especially the Chutzlar, my sense is that most people are not so careful about that. But that would be the shout of donuts, where the donuts are obligated in a fresh challah. So it happens to be that the Dunkin' Donuts nap is owned by Goyim, because it's a Goyish company. So the din is that it has to be every sosech, and my isas afam. So the Dunkin' Donuts are fine. But if you have a Hamish donuts, so we don't have Hamish donuts, right? But in Chanukah, we have Hamish donuts. So I don't know, I'm not sure what the Hamish companies are doing in terms of the donuts. And my guess is they're probably not big. The ones would not be mafish from the batter cakes. The zikr not be mafish. Here it says in Shulchan Aruch, you don't have to be a mafish. So again, some are mafish for a bit of time, but mikra din not. So some of you were sure, what was it last week or 2 weeks ago when somebody announced on Sunday morning, right before the shiur, that everyone should enjoy the pastry in the back. So I quietly walked over to him. He enjoyed this my comment. I quietly walked over to him. I said, "Your announcement is against the Mefarish Rashi in Parshas Niketz, the end of Parshas Vayeshev." I said, "The Rashi says about the dream of the Sarah Ophim. So Rashi writes today, Shlosha Salichor, Rashi. So Rashi writes, he gives you the old French word for baked goods. He says pastry, that's what he says. And Rashi says, the ain pastry, el v'afiyah, v'lechem, something like that. He gives some kind of phrase that the word pastry has a specific meaning. It only means something that was nefa, something that was baked. So they said that the donuts were not baked. That's why they're not b'chaim chal. They were deep fried. So therefore, you cannot announce that this is a certain pastry at the Shia. If you've ever died for the Shia, anyway, you got a good kick out of it. Okay. Back to Shia, basically. They're insulted. They insulted this pastry. I don't think we have Shabbos. Okay. Anyway, back to that story. So we have these strange kinds of foods that may or may not be obligated in chal. The real makor, the emesachal, that's for sure bread, matzah, etc. Those things are for sure obligated in chal. When we speak about being obligated chalas, we mentioned before that not every single dough or anything is going to be chayim chal unless it has a certain size to it. Where did that halacha come from? Because the pasuk says reshisa reshisechem, it has to be kidei isaschem, it has to be the amount of a dough that the Torah is speaking about. What kind of dough is the Torah speaking to? So the Torah is given to the door, hamidbar, so the Shabbat is speaking to the people and saying to them, reshisa reshisechem, your dough. How big is the dough? If you lived in the midbar, how big is your dough? So we know exactly how big your dough is. The Oymas Reseifu, the Torah tells us in Parshas B'Shalach that how big the dough of the man was, how much man they collected every day. So now you just make a little bit of a calculation. So Rashi, if you place in Chumash, quotes the same. So whenever it comes up in the Gemara, Rashi will go through the same calculation. It's one of those Rashis that most of us just kind of gloss over, make believe that we understand. But it comes out to 43 and a fifth eggs worth of flour. So how much that translates to the Maisa, so as we know already from other areas of Halacha, whenever shiurim are given to us, all the shiurim are given to us in terms of beitzim and zeisim and those kinds of things, so we try very, very hard to try to extrapolate, try to figure out how to plug that into the Maisa and Zman Hazeh. So not a great surprise, there are different opinions as to what that number translates to. When we were kids, so they always told us the following, they said, if you have 5 pounds of flour, then you know for a fact, Eichayim Chal. It happens to be convenient because that's how the flour is sold in 5 pound bags. So that's the way it was always presented. If it's 5 pounds, then for sure. And if it's 2.5 pounds or it's 3 pounds, then it's a suffix. If it's less than that, then not. That was a lingo, that was a lashon that was always transmitted to us, ish repish, since 30 years ago. So I'm not exactly sure who started that lashon. I'm not questioning, but I'm not exactly sure where that came from. I think that's almost easier to make a cheshbon in terms of cups. How many cups of flour do you have? So if you make the cheshbon, just if you assume that an ounce is a kezias, so then if it's you make the shiurim in terms of a ratio of kezias to a kubetza, so last time I made the numbers, I think it comes out to 11 cups. You do the math later. I think it comes out to, if you have 11 cups of flour, so then you've most probably reached over the mark in terms of kibbutz, and that's what I think should come out. You just make the cheshbon, there are 8 ounces in a cup. So 8 ounces in a cup comes out to 80. You have 11 cups, so you have 88 ounces of flour, and if a kibbutz is twice the kezias, so you have 44 kezasim. When you have 88, right? That was the cheshbon that I made. So I think if you have 11 cups of flour, I think you've crossed the threshold in terms of being chayev and chalav. Well, that's not happening, not for shadow problem. And that's the number I tell people, it's just easier when people starting to measure pounds, putting pounds of flour on the scales. It's a little easier that way. So bottom line is, if you have any stuff and you're not sure what to do, so you separate a little piece of shadow problem. That's the end of the world. Okay, hopefully Mitzvah Shem, next week we'll try to continue. Just now that you have this chalav, what the world's supposed to do with this chalav, so we'll try to figure that out.